Every year, by good calendrical fortune, we read in Parshat Emor the commandment of Sfirat HaOmer, the counting of the Omer, during the period in which we actually count the Omer. This moment of sync between reading and ritual presents us with an opportunity to recognize our contemporary practice as continuous from the words of the Torah. Yet, when we begin to read through those words, we quickly see that our counting ritual today looks very different from the original mitzvah. Parshat Emor tells us that when the Israelites one day enter the land and begin to plant new crops, they are to bring the first collected omer, a unit of volume, of grain to the priest, and then begin counting 7 complete weeks, and then, on the 50th day, to bring a new grain offering to the Eternal. Throughout most of Jewish history, however, there's been no active Beit HaMikdash and no agricultural access to the land of Israel. Yet, we kept up the ritual of counting. Detached from its original agricultural significance, Sfirat HaOmer became a practice of just counting for counting's sake. The Talmud already records that the 5th century sage Amemar was not so scrupulous about counting both days and weeks, as is the standard custom, because, he said, the counting is now only done zecher lemikdash, in memory of the temple. The Kabbalistic tradition of attaching 2 sfirot, divine qualities, to each day has valiantly provided some meaningful content to a mitzvah that might otherwise feel a little empty. Yet an earlier story in the Torah's narrative can provide our counting ritual with a symbolic meaning that endures far beyond the temple service. The first Omer in the Torah appears in chapter 16 of the book of Exodus, in Parshat Beshalach. The Israelites have just completed the exodus from Egypt, escaping the Egyptian armies by crossing the Red Sea, and as they wander out into the desert, they begin to complain of hunger. God responds with the offer of a miracle, promising to rain down manna, daily bread from heaven. However, it's framed from the start as a test, to see Hayelich b'torati imlo, if they will follow my Torah or not. So they're given some collection instructions, which include one very specific measurement. Zeh davar asher tziva Hashem, this is what the Eternal has commanded. Liktu mimenu ish lefi ochlo, omer lagulgolet. Gather each of you as much as you require to eat, an omer per person. For as many of you as there are, every man shall gather for those in his tent. Here in this first mention of an omer, it seems to represent a basic unit of sustenance, the amount of food that one fully grown person needs every day. So the omer measurement is to be used to ensure that everyone has enough to survive. The people seem to be able to follow these instructions precisely, for in the next lines we read, V'yasu chen b'nei Yisrael, and the Israelites did so, some gathering more and some gathering less. And when they measured by the omer, the one who had gathered more had no excess, and the one who had gathered less had no lack. Everyone had gathered what they needed to eat. They demonstrate an immediate ability to carefully measure out resources and an intuitive appreciation of the underlying principle that everyone in society should have at least their basic needs met. So far, it seems, they're passing the test. The next 2 instructions, however, the Israelites do not so readily adopt. First, Moshe tells them not to save any of the food for the next morning. Ish lo yoter mimenu ad boker. They are to eat their fill for that day and then trust that more manna will come the next day. But, the next verse says, Velo shamu el Moshe. They did not listen to Moshe and kept some over until morning. Perhaps we can sympathize with their instincts. These were newly freed slaves, after all, on the run and not sure where their next meal was coming from. So they were anxious about the coming day's hunger, and they hoarded. But to no avail. The next day, the hoarded manna becomes immediately worm-infested and rotten. And Moshe is furious at their disobedience, and they seem duly chastened, for they begin going out every morning to collect their daily rations. Ve'yiliktu oto baboker baboker ish kafi ochlo. Another kind of test comes on the sixth day, however, when they go out to gather and are surprised to find that some extra manna awaits them. Laktu lechem mishne, shnei ha'omer. They collected double their bread, two omers. They're uncertain what to do with the surplus, having just been told not to keep any manna for the next day. So they go and tell Moshe, who explains that they're receiving a double portion because the next day is Shabbat. This sixth-day manna, they're told, can be kept for the next day. Morning comes, and indeed, the manna has not gone bad. By now, surely they have enough verification to trust in God's power and Moshe's messaging. So Moshe explains to them, for the first time, how to observe Shabbat. Vayomer Moshe, Ichluhu ayom, ki Shabbat ayom la'Hashem. Moshe said, eat it today, for today is a Shabbat of the Eternal, and you will not find any in the field. For 6 days you will collect it, and the seventh day is Shabbat, and there will be none. But some of the Israelites once again ignore the restriction, and, ever scavenging for more provisions, they go out the next morning hoping to collect a little extra on Shabbat. Of course, no manna comes. This time it's God who's furious, and now explicitly and emphatically commands them to stay put on Shabbat. Once again, after being chastised, they seem to learn their lesson and begin observing the seventh day as a day of rest. Vayishpatu ha'am b'yom ha'shvi'i. The people rested on the seventh day, following a protocol that will continue for the rest of their 40-year journey. If we now return to the Sfirat HaOmer ritual in Parshat Emor, we will find that its structure replicates many key features of the Exodus narrative we've just described. First, of course, there is the prominence of the Omer itself. Like their ancestors 40 years earlier, the first Israelites to arrive in the new land begin by collecting, very precisely, an Omer of grain. Then the counting itself begins, and, as we noted above, it is described in two time units, days and weeks. Here's the language from our parsha. Usvartem lechem mimacharat ha-shabbat, miyom heviachem et omer hatnufa, sheva shabbatot tmimot tiena. You shall count for yourselves from the day after the holiday, from the day you brought the omer as an elevation offering, will be 7 complete weeks. Ad mimacharat ha-shabbat ha-shvi'it, tisperu chamishim yom, v'ikravtem mincha chadasha la'Hashem. On the day after the seventh week, you shall count the 50th day, and then bring a grain offering to the Eternal. Recall that the Israelites in the desert also received instructions to follow a regular daily counting, baboker, baboker, and then, layered upon that, they were instructed to follow a regular weekly counting, in measurements of 7. Sheshet yamim tilaktuhu uveyom hashvi'i Shabbat. This was their first introduction to Shabbat, an observance so prominent among the commandments that it will merit inclusion as the 4th of the 10 commandments spoken at Mount Sinai. The practice of a 7-day Shabbat rhythm is surely one good way to see if they can follow God's Torah or not. The language of the commandment of Sfirat HaOmer, then, echoing the earlier narrative, not only picks up on those two forms of counting, but also gives great emphasis to the word Shabbat, using it repeatedly to describe both weeks, Shabbatot Tmimot, and specific days, Mimacharat HaShabbat, even when there are other more common words that the Torah might have used for weeks, Shavuot, and days, Yamim, or Achag for holiday. Finally, consider the placement of this counting ritual in the calendar. It comes just after Pesach and leads, 7 weeks later, into Shavuot. This parallels the placement of the story in chapter 16, which picks up just after the actual Exodus, a crossing over onto dry land, and begins with one Omer, and then 7 days later culminates in Shabbat. And just as the generation of the desert was given Mishneh Lechem, two portions of bread for Shabbat, so Shavuot in our calendar culminates with an offering of the same. Mimoshvotechem taviu lechem tnufa shtayim. From your settlements you shall bring two loaves of bread as an elevation offering. Each shall be made of 2/10 of a measure of choice flour baked after leavening as first fruits to the Eternal. Sfirat HaOmer, then, is meant to take us back to the moments after the Exodus, when we were finally free but suddenly terrified, wondering how we would survive. We retrace those first days and weeks of learning by reenacting a daily and then a weekly counting. When on Shavuot we conclude by offering two loaves of bread, we're giving special gratitude for the two portions of manna that came in the desert for Shabbat. The need for this memorialization was already anticipated back in Parshat Beshalach. Before the story there concludes, Moshe delivers one last instruction to God. Let one omer of manna be kept throughout the ages, he says, so that they will see the bread that I fed them in the desert when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. So Moshe said to Aaron, take a jar, put one omer of manna in it, and place it before the Eternal to be kept throughout the ages. So Aaron collects this omer of manna and places it, the Torah says, in front of the testimony, lifnei ha'edut. Because of this language, which will eventually describe the tablets with the Ten Commandments, our sages conclude that the Ark of the Covenant contained not only the tablets, but also that jar with an omer of manna in it. That image boldly suggests that this omer of manna was as sacred to our people as the tablets themselves, and so that the story of learning to gather food in the desert is as important as the great revelation at Mount Sinai. So, what lessons are we meant to recall from those first days of gathering manna? The first, symbolized by the omer itself, is the basic premise that every person in this new society should have enough to survive. That much, even then, we seem to grasp intuitively. But the other two lessons were more difficult to integrate. To trust that God would provide enough for us on a daily basis, and then to trust that God would even provide enough for us that we could risk taking a day of rest. These were not easy concepts for a bunch of newly freed slaves to grasp. Nor are they such easy concepts for us to grasp even now, all these generations later. Are we willing to take only what we need, to let go of our anxieties about the future, and to trust that we will always be given enough? Are we willing to take a day off work every week to invest in our spiritual and communal lives, and to trust that we will still make enough to survive? These have never been easy questions. Our ancestors grappled with them during their first days and weeks of freedom. And we, too, as we count the days and weeks of the Omer, in our journey to receiving Torah, we remember that first Omer and ask ourselves again, Hayelech b'Torati imlo, if we are ready yet to follow the path of Torah.